To another exciting episode of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles. I'm your host, Tim D-O-double-G. And tonight we've got a full house. I am joined by, on Twitter, at Agent underscore 70.
What's up, everybody?
I also have at PCN underscore dirt on Twitter. From popculturenetwork.com. Go check his website out.
Please do. I appreciate it.
And last but not least, we have at Roddy Cat on Twitter.
Hello, everybody.
And you know me. I'm at TimDOGG98 on Twitter. Also follow the Click Nation Twitter account at The Click Nation. Go to the website, theclicknation.com. Like our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/theclicknation. Add us to your circles on Google+. Just search for The Click Nation. And also join the community. That's The Click Nation community. Subscribe to the YouTube channel, youtube.com/TheClickNation. We are on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. And if there's ever any feedback you want to have read on a future show, send that on over to TheClickNation@gmail.com. So, with all that out the way, we've got a couple news items that we'll touch upon before we get to our reviews of this week's comics. And I had this number one, and now I can't remember if we actually talked about this last week or not. It might have broke Friday, now that I think about it. But anyway, Bradley Cooper will be voicing Rocket Raccoon in the Guardians of the Galaxy movie.
That works.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm kind of at the point now. It's like, you know, anytime we hear some of these rumors lately, they're probably going to be true. There hadn't really been too many as of late. Now, sometimes that's not always the case, but, you know.
It's not like he came out with a denial, so.
Basically. It was like, no, we don't want to actually, you know, say it's true right now. Just let him sweat for a little bit or what have you.
Yeah. There are people like, who was it, Edgar Wright? Not Edgar Wright, whoever the guy talking about he wants to be Ant-Man. From the whatever that movie that just came out, The World's End.
Oh, Simon Pegg.
Yeah.
Scotty.
At I forget who the other guy was talking about. He was gonna be Black Panther. But yeah, people, you know, the people making up news.
Who's that, John Mahonsu?
No, I forget the guy's name. This doesn't matter because it wasn't true anyway. But yeah, people just making up rumors, trying to say, I'm gonna take a picture in front of this Marvel character. Maybe they want to have me in for a meeting. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Or like Justin Timberlake wants to. I saw an article. Justin Timberlake wants to be the Riddler.
Yeah, I caught that.
Yeah.
I caught that. I saw that. I'm surprised I didn't even jot that down for news, because it's just something that he said he wanted to do.
Yeah, that was pretty much why I didn't.
Next up in the news, we have Mark Waid decides to – well, first I had it, Mark Waid buys into a comic book store, but now I had to change it to stores, plural, because I guess apparently he's a partner in two comic book stores. Mm-hmm. So good for him, especially since he's all the – everyone thinks of him as the big digital pioneer or ringleader, but – to show that he also wants brick-and-mortar stores to live on, he's putting his money where his mouth is, and so he has stock in two stores.
Well, the first store was his local comic book shop, wherever he lives. And I guess, I don't know if they were having...
Muncie, Indiana.
Yeah, I'm not sure if they were having hard times or what the deal was, but he decided to get in with them.
I think they were trying to expand. That's when he got in.
But then Franco and Art... Balthazar, yeah, however you pronounce his name, they opened a store up just south of Chicago, which they call Aw Yeah Comics, which is the name of their new comic, incidentally. And he decided, I would assume that they were at a con, you know, at some point, having some sort of conversation about buying into stores. And they said, well, you know what? As long as you're buying into stores, you know.
Got one for you.
Yeah, so put some money there, too. So, I mean, and that's... you know, more power to him, you know.
Yeah. So we'll see if that actually, if something comes of that. I'd assume not, but you never know. More likely, it'll be news that's forgotten down the road. Next up, Marvel released some new teaser images today for something going down on September 18th.
I hate... Companies are doing – first it was like Dark Horse doing this. Then IDW, I think, started doing it. Boom started doing it. Now Marvel's doing it, where they release these useless, pointless PR images that – for someone who helps to run a website where we post news when we get it, you know, someone sends us a press release and we'll post the press release. They send us a press release that is completely worthless, that we can't do anything with. That doesn't have any information, you know. It's just like, hey, we're telling you that we're going to tell you something, so make sure you stay tuned so that you hear what we want you to hear at some point in the future when we tell you something, you know. It's like, as far as I know, this is a new, you know, Power Pack series until they tell me different, you know. So it's like, how can I care? How can I be excited? You know,
I care about Power Pack.
Okay, well, yeah,
you would.
But yeah, I mean, it's when they send these things out that don't tell you anything. Image started doing this too during the San Diego Comic-Con, where they just sent out an image of pavement and it just said road on it, and they sent out another one that said dead on it, you know. And it was just like, what? Like,
my only example of receiving emails like that are since I get the Dark Horse emails. Dark Horse this week has been doing their Baltimore Comic Con teases, and it's like, I guess it's supposed to be one of four. Like, it's four. Like, for the past 4 days, they've released the same image, but more of it, like, colored in each day. And they've done some others like that in the past. Yeah. Just sending an email, and it's just an image in it. And I'm like, okay, I don't know what this is.
Yeah, and I don't post them, you know?
Yeah, I don't either.
If someone sends me a press release, I post it, you know, at least. We're reading it and paying attention to it. But when they just send you an image, it's like, I've got no headline. I've got no context. I don't have a story here. There's nothing of value to this. I don't post them.
I will admit they are, I do like the image, whatever the final image is going to be in this, whatever the Baltimore Comic-Con image they're showing. A lot of times the images do look nice, but like you said, you just don't know what it is.
Yeah. Is it a variant cover only available at the con? Is it a new series that they're going to announce? Is it a crossover? You know, it's just like, give me a reason to care, but they don't. So
yeah,
they lose.
So today's Thursday. So Wednesday was the first image. Is he? And I think today's was something like, will they or I forget how
it was Tuesday. Was is he, and then Wednesday. Yeah,
did
whatever.
Skip it Wednesday.
Is there, and then Thursday is she. So there's a he, a she, and a there.
I didn't know about that one.
Yeah. So.
Okay. I was busy today, so I couldn't keep up with too much news.
There's smoke swirling in the background. And if you look at it, you can kind of make out faces. People say they can make out the face of Dr. Doom in one of the swirls of smoke. Someone said they make out the face of Frank Castle, the Punisher, in one of the swirls of smoke. But, I mean, it's looking at clouds. You know, you're going to see
it. I could see a mat making out the shape of a mask, but of a face. That's some good detailed smoke.
And there are people that find subliminal advertising in everything.
Yeah, I was about to say, and that's probably why they do those particular ones like that, because they know people are going to just try to go through the speculation route.
Mm-hmm. I'm not playing their game, man. I'm holding firm.
You do that.
Yeah.
Wait, why do I get drones on that?
Now you get laughter. Let's see. Next up, RoboCop trailer was released today for the reboot. It's not really comic book news, but I figured I'd mention it anyway. I watched it before the show.
I don't hate it.
Yeah, I saw your comment.
Interesting. I haven't watched it yet.
I saw people complaining about it before. Like, I got home, ate, and turned the laptop on. I saw a couple of, you know, RoboCop this, RoboCop that. And I was like, oh, there must be a trailer out. Let me go find it. And then when I was about to find it, someone tweeted it, so I clicked on it. I watched it. I had the same reaction as Dirt. I was like, oh, that looks kind of interesting.
There are aspects that they've brought into it that I didn't expect, like the relationship with his family, his wife having to make the decision of what to do with his body, you know, like some of that stuff. I've noticed in this one that they kept his hand, which was a line of dialogue in the first one, that they could save the brain and the hand, and then they decided to ditch the hand, whatever. So at least it shows me in these little subtle ways that they are respecting the original, and even though they're rebooting it and reworking it, there's an image where they're showing what his armor is going to look like, and they show the original suit from the original movies, and then they're like, no, make it sleeker, make it more dynamic, make it look black, you know, and then they show it, you know, refining and whatever, and it was just a lot of stuff that made me, like, I couldn't hate it. Like, I wanted to hate it. Ever since I saw the first design of the new outfit, I wanted to be all Ben Affleck as Batman about it, but it's actually not bad.
I like how sleek it looked, too.
It actually looks a lot nicer in motion than I thought it was going to. Because when you see it in those original still images, it looks like those stupid exosuits from the G.I. Joe movie. And yeah. I was afraid that that's what it was going to be. But this actually looks pretty nice.
And I liked the fluid motion of how he moved. It wasn't robotic.
Well, I like the helmet, the way the helmet, like, retracts so that they can do facial expression. And they can do a lot more with that, you know. I'm looking forward to it a lot more than I thought it was going to be. And it's got Michael Keaton in it. And that really helps.
Gary Oldman's
in it. And
Sam Jackson.
Yeah, Samuel Jackson.
Who's in everything. I forgot he was going to be in this, too. I saw him on there. I was like, oh. Sam Jack. At it again. Exactly. But he probably just has a small role because that's usually what he does. And my final article of the night, at least unless someone else has something later, J.H. Williams and W. Hayden Blackman leave the Batwoman creative team. Or they were the creative team, and now they've decided to leave the book. With, of course, creative or editorial differences.
Yeah, apparently it has something to do with... Lord, why am I drawing a blank? So the main character and her significant other was supposed to be getting married, and the DC supposedly is not allowing it? Was it the rumor or something?
The story kind of evolved a couple different ways, and it started with that they had been building to this storyline for a couple years, that this is something big that they wanted to do, and they wanted to make it an event as part of the thing, and DC kind of you know, they let them kind of do their own thing for, you know, a year and a half, whatever. And then they came in and they started to go, okay, we're doing these company-wide crossovers. We're going to be doing this with, you know, Bat Books. We're going to be doing that. We're going to be, you know, tying all this stuff together. And they said, well, we have the storyline that we wanted to do. And they basically said no, because we've got these, you know, mandates for storylines that we got to hit. So when the story first came out, the way it was worded made it sound like DC wasn't going to let them do the wedding, and the wedding was the reason why they were quitting. But as time went on and a little more details came out, it was more of they wanted to do a particular story, and regardless of what that story was, editorial wanted different things to happen because of crossovers and because of tying the Bat Books together and all these different things. So it wasn't so much the wedding as it was they wanted to tell their story, and editorial said, no, you have to tell this story because this is what we want published as part of this ongoing whatever. And because of that, you know, disconnect, they just decided that if they can't do what they want to do, they're just not going to do it anymore.
Has Batwoman even crossed over in the Bat story?
She's been in Batman Incorporated a couple times, but not tied in as directly as a lot of the other books. And apparently that's one of the things that they want to bring up, especially because like with Night of the Owls, you really didn't need to have her in there. But there's one. What's the next crossover? Dark City, I think, is what comes after your Zero Year.
Oh.
And in Dark City, something happens with all of Gotham, so it's going to affect her because she's in Gotham. And so they wanted some sort of tie-in, whatever, and they weren't going to be able to tell the story that they wanted to, and so that was just, you know. So I'm hoping that they cancel the book and instead make Bat-Cow into a monthly series, because I'll buy like 5 copies of that book every month.
I was going to say, of course, it would tie into the Bat book that is out of continuity anyway. Off by itself. And it's funny because I was telling someone earlier this morning about this. I was like, oh yeah, I remember there were rumors like maybe 3 months ago or back in the spring, there were rumors that J.H. Williams was upset or displeased with editorial because they were going to do a Killer Croc Villains Month book, and then they were told, oh, you can't do that now. And they were like, what?
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, it kind of comes down to you don't really know exactly who to blame, because on the one hand, people want to say, well, you know, editorial should be hands off and whatever. But at the same time, it's like they're world building, you know, they're trying to tie these things together. They're trying to have these things make sense. And there are times when you do need to rein people in. And if you want total creative freedom, you can't do that working on a corporate book. You're going to have to go out and do your own thing. So, I mean, there's a little bit, there was probably some miscommunication or some disconnect at some point where it wasn't made clear of what they were going to have to do in the future or how quickly it was coming, and, you know, caused some tempers to flare up. But, you know, it's just, it kind of goes along with some of the other creators who've walked away because they're like, well, editorial keeps telling me that I have to do this and that and the other. And it's like, well, that's kind of editorial's job, you know, that's right. What they do.
I think the problem comes in when the changes are last minute. That seems to be one gripe that comes up is last minute changes, but then you're just kind of scrambling to readjust on the fly.
Which I guess I'm different from a lot of other people, because whenever there's like a last minute change for me, that's a challenge, you know, as opposed to a wrench. I always see stuff like that as like, okay, well, now here's the time to do some problem solving and figure stuff out. Whereas other people see stuff like that and they just, I can't believe that there's blah, blah, blah. So,
whatever. Yeah, I think creative people take that more personally. Oh, you're stifling me.
So, oh well.
Yeah. Anyone else have any news?
I know
you tweeted something out about Marvel female superhero film just being the cards.
Yeah. Like, I saw that one and another one from IO9 talking about Miss Marvel. I don't know, something about, you know, I didn't read that one, so I'm just going to skip that one. There was something about Miss Marvel.
I've got it up now. It just seems like, Luis de Esposito, who is a producer and director of many of the Marvel one-shot films, I guess that person is has been teasing that a female superhero movie could be in the works. That's about it.
Yeah. Which, you know, I've kind of said, like, sure, why not? You know, Captain Marvel would probably work well, and there had been whispers about maybe Black Widow 1, which, because she's already established at this point. But, sure, hey, it'd be good to see a couple of female solo movies. That's not Elektra.
Yes, we'll forget Elektra.
Yeah.
Did you guys see the Batfleck concept art that supposedly leaked?
Yes, I saw that earlier today.
Steve Scott, who did the Dark Knight comic book adaptation, and he did some designs for Smallville, put an image up on his Facebook page that he said was artwork he was selling. And the artwork was what appears to be Ben Affleck in a movie-esque, Nolan-esque type suit with some, you know, tweaks to it, some subtle changes. And then it was removed a few minutes later with just a comment up there that said something like, oops, that's the wrong one, or something along those lines. But before he did, of course, somebody saved it to their hard drive. So,
yeah. So it could be legit, huh?
It could be. I don't know. We'll see.
Got some tweets from Roddy Cat, you're on the show, from Dork Geekus. He says, every creator has to remember that DC/Marvel characters are just toys they're allowed to play with. They don't own them. True.
Yep.
Any more news?
Nope.
Going once, going twice, sold. So before we get into this week's books, I'm going to go back and kind of very quickly go over the books I read over the weekend that came out last week that I said I actually would read.
Sure, and I got a couple too.
See, Thor, God of Thunder, number 12. It was a nice sort of a quiet issue after the whole 11-issue epic God Gore, the God Butcher storyline. They introduced a possible new love interest for Thor. TMNT or Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, number 25. Is it Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles or TMNT the name of the ongoing? I'm going to go TMNT.
I believe it's actually printed as Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Okay. I just like to abbreviate it then. But anyway, issue 25. I like that there's a couple of comments that have come out there, you know, number 25 issues, and they haven't done anything to, you know, commemorate the occasion. Back, you know, in the 80s and 90s, you know, issues 25 would be double-sized if the graphite cover or whatever. But this continued the City Fall storyline, which I'm enjoying, and Raphael being the hothead and the Turtles having to calm him down so they could go try to rescue their brother, Leonardo. Ultimate Comics, Spider-Man, number 26. Again, another great issue from Bendis and Dave Marquez. Morning Glories, number 30, which was my first time reading Morning Glories from Image, and I enjoyed it. I don't know if I can explain. It was a sort of a solo issue concentrating on the character Irina and her background with her mother and how she was brought up. So that's going to be added to my reading pile going forward.
I gave up on that one, actually. I read that one for probably the first 20 issues or so, and then after a while I just gave up because it was so random, and I kind of felt like it was trying to be Lost in a lot of ways, where it introduces stuff and doesn't explain it, and you don't know if it ever is or not, and stuff you think is going to be important is not important, and they never go back to, and I don't know. I just kind of gave up on it because it seemed like they were never going to really answer anything. They were just throwing out more mumbo-jumbo.
Okay. We'll see if I... There was actually a book that came out this month, another book that came out this month from Image I tried for the first time, but and I think I'm going to add it to my reading list, but I'll save that for later when we get to it. And it actually has me wanting to go back and, like, find trades for it to catch up. But let's see, another new Image book I tried was Thief of Thieves, number 16. It was all right. You know, I like caper movies, so I might as well give some caper comics a try. So I'll give it the next couple months. I'll keep reading it and see if I stick with it. The Flash 23, we got to find out who the Reverse Flash was. Aquaman 23 ended on sort of a cliffhanger. Talon 11, I don't really even remember what happened in that. I need to start reading that book. And the Green Team, number 4, it wasn't as fun as the other issues, but still kind of a nice, fun book that probably will be canceled within the next 3 months. And that's it for the stuff I read over the weekend.
I'll throw in a couple. Just Aquaman 23, I thought was a well-done issue. It ends on a cliffhanger in order to bring readers back after Forever Evil. Pelletier's art is very good, and Aquaman is definitely shining right now. The Batman Incorporated special number 1, these are short stories about the various Batman Incorporated characters around the world now that Batman Incorporated has dissolved, and the book is about to end. These short stories are fairly entertaining, but we'll see what happens to these characters once the series ends. Batman Superman number 3. This was kind of a confusing book. It's interesting, you know, to see the interactions between these characters from different times and different, you know, worlds. But, we'll see where the story goes. And The Flash number 23 is another cliffhanger pre-Forever Evil. Tim Dog says, it's reveals the identity of the new Reverse Flash, and we'll see what happens after Forever Evil ends.
I'm glad you brought up Batman Superman 3, because I had it on my list after Thief of Thieves and before The Flash, and for some reason I just skipped right over it. I don't know what to make of this book.
I don't blame you.
And half of it is Jay Lee's art, because I don't know who's talking, which version of which Superman and Batman I'm reading and looking at, who's getting mad at who, and I'm ready for my man Brett Booth to come on issue 5, I believe it is. I need the break.
I don't blame you. I don't. You know,
what is Dirt making faces at?
Brett Booth.
Brett Booth.
But no, I mean, I'll agree that Jay Lee, I thought when the series started, I thought he was going to be able to handle it okay, and it seemed to be all right for the first couple issues, even though I've never been the biggest fan of his style. It seemed to work okay. You know, and it gave it atmosphere and whatever. But yeah, I have to agree that reading this issue, it was just almost impossible to tell who was talking, you know, and a lot of times you couldn't even tell not only like which Superman it was, but you couldn't even tell if the words were coming from someone male or female. You just got a lot of silhouettes and shadows and half a face over here. And, you know, just it was terrible.
And it's funny, I just happen to have a comic scene here, and I believe this is a Jay Lee cover. Can someone tell?
Does that
look like him?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. Classic Material sent this to me when he went to New York Comic Con last year.
Classic Material!
Shoutouts. Rest in peace.
But you're not. No, he will return.
That's my boy. All right, so that was the short, quick rundown of what we read over the weekend. So now we can get on to this week's books. And first up will be... Let's see, I do want to mention from Boom Studios, they had a new number one issue for Hit, which is a 4-issue limited series. Only reason I bring it up is I will attempt to read it over the weekend. It's like a noir type, not a mystery, like a crime mystery book, I believe is what it's supposed to be.
They solicited this as being cops off duty, working their own, like private hit squad or whatever, something like that. So I figured it's really one of those that I'll get back to reading. I'll, you know, some point down the line, maybe this will be my weekend book to talk about next week, but I figured it's one of those things I'll read eventually.
Yeah. Nothing I was, like, rushing to get to.
There was a lot of stuff that came out this week.
Yeah.
Too much.
Which you'll see, which is why I read no Villains Month book yet.
We were cramming.
And I still won't read all of the ones that came out this week. I'll be picking and choosing.
Well, yeah.
Shout out to... I'm sorry?
Well, I said even I won't be reading all of them.
Yeah, no, there's no way. I was about to say shout out to Eclectic and his and his podcast that provided a soundtrack. The Encyclopedia Hip Hop podcast provided a nice soundtrack for me last night to cram as many of these books in as possible. So a shout out to Eclectic and the Encyclopedia Hip Hop podcast. This week it was on the Juice Crew. So shout out to him for giving me something interesting to listen to while I was trying to read as much as I could.
And go ahead.
I would say before we move too far down the alphabet, I do have a book from Avatar.
Okay.
Absolution Rubicon number 3. Basically, this is the story of the superhero who turns, vigilante. In the last issue, they released a supervillain from prison who is, if you want to say like a General Zod meets evil Professor X meets Jeffrey Dahmer. They let loose in an attempt to kind of, bring this guy in. He's a former, the main character of the book is a former police officer turned vigilante. So they let this bad guy out in order to try to, bring him in, kill him, whatever. But instead, the bad guy just goes insane and starts tearing apart the whole city. And when the heroes try to get involved to try to stop him, they get knocked out. So in this issue, it picks up about a week later, and you find that our hero, John Dusk, he's been almost comatose for a week. He's been nursed back to health in this crime-ridden neighborhood, and he knows that there's no way he can go out and find the supervillain. Like, the supervillain has gone into hiding, and he's so powerful, there's no way that you can track him down. So instead, he decides to clean up this, it looks like Detroit. It's, pimps walking the street, drug deals going down, all the time. The cops don't come anymore type of neighborhood. So he just cleans up the town, and he says, this area is now under my protection. And he's just basically trying to bait this big supervillain to come and get him, which at the end of the issue, you see that the villain is watching the news and sees that, there he is. So they're getting ready for a big confrontation. So this is only, I want to say maybe a 5-issue series. It might be 6, but we're on 3, so we're either halfway or a little past. And it's, you had like the big battle, the good guy lost, now he's starting to build that big comeback, and we're going to have a giant face off. But this is one of those titles where the hero very well could die at the end of the series, which puts it in kind of a different context than your standard superhero book. So I've really enjoyed it, and I'm looking forward to continuing with the series.
I just now noticed that she's holding a sword in her hand at the top of the book.
She,
I was kind of just taking it all in.
She's an assassin. She's a young Japanese girl, and she calls herself Happy Kitty, kind of like Hello Kitty. and she's got some sort of mental reading powers where she can sense what someone's going to do before they do it, which makes her the perfect assassin. She's unstoppable in a fight. And she doesn't face her first loss until losing to this big bad guy in the last issue. And so this issue is John Dusk trying to kind of build her back up and bring her back into fighting mode. But then he realizes that she's a little kid. She's like 13, 14 years old. So now he's starting to second guess, whether or not he should have built her back up or just let her, slink off and go back to her life. So there's a second layer kind of to the storyline going on at the same time.
Okay. So down to Dark Horse now.
Wait a minute. I got some. You're going all the way down to D. I got a C.
Oh, go ahead.
Let me see if I'm not going to see. One problem with this week is because the books shipped late. They actually came out on Wednesday morning instead of Tuesday morning. Usually I have a whole day to go through all the comics and inventory them, so I have all the covers laid out in a nice alphabetical manner, but because they came late, I was scrounging for everything at the last moment. So it's going to take me a minute to find some of these covers here, just so you know. But the Red 10, number 4, this is from Comics Tribe. And basically, it's a murder mystery. Superheroes are getting murdered.
It's the Red and Purple Lanterns.
Actually, it is. That's exactly the point. He made a super team of basically his own analogs of DC and Marvel heroes. He basically took an Agatha Christie novel and has turned it into a comic book series. And so in this, the Batman character known as Red is murdered. And when they try to track down the murderer, they find out that the murderer was actually murdered. And the person they thought did it is not the one who did it, and there's someone else in control. And they're all trapped on this island, and they're one by one being killed off. The thing is, as they die in a manner that matches a nursery rhyme they find written in blood next to the body of the guy who they thought was the killer. So every one of them is dying in some sort of predetermined manner. Mm-hmm. But the manner in which they're dying is not necessarily at the hands of one killer. It's not like, for instance, the guy here on the cover is their Green Lantern analog. His name is Orion. He's got this power belt from outer space that makes him protector of this sector of the universe. You find out that he is actually not the guy who was given the belt. He was not the one, you know, presented with it and told to become the new protector. He's actually the guy's twin brother. They both got drunk one night and they were celebrating, and he wanted to get the belt from his brother to try it out and have powers, and he accidentally knocked his brother off a bridge and his brother died. So he's been taking his place, and this, you know, galactic core, whatever, realizes that he's an imposter. So they strip him of the belt. The only problem is they strip him of the belt while he's flying in low Earth orbit. So his body plummets back to Earth, but it matches the quatrain of the nursery rhyme. And so even though it feels like it's something that's not connected, somehow it is connected. And somehow it's all going to work itself together. You just don't know how or by whom. But so far there's a speedster like the Flash. There's a guy who wields mystical powers like Doctor Strange. There was the Batman and Robin. Goddess, like a Wonder Woman type character. There was an android female. There was a green Martian shapeshifter. Like, you know, all these different characters are part of this team. So it's kind of fun watching how they're deconstructed. And it's actually been a very fun series.
It sounds like the Crime Syndicate. They're from Earth 55.
They're from Earth 3.
I understand the Red 10.
Well, does that lady on the? I was about to say, does that character, the female character on that cover, is she suffering from
Total Recall?
Yes, Total Recall.
Yeah, and the guy even makes a comment about that in the book. That does not go unnoticed.
That's funny.
Yeah,
good eye there.
It's good.
Oh, this is what I'm looking for all the time.
Now to Dark Horse.
All right.
Catalyst Comics number 3 came out. I never read issue 2, and I probably won't be reading any more of it. The first issue was all right. It didn't grab me enough.
Is it an anthology or is it an ongoing series?
I believe it's an ongoing.
So you read it's part of the whole
superhero side of Dark Horse. It was just where they've been promoting it.
First issue and the third issue of an ongoing series, but not the second issue?
The second issue has come out already.
Why no? But didn't you say you didn't read 2?
I didn't read 2. I just read issue 1.
So you read 1 and you read 3?
I didn't read 3 either.
I thought you said you read 3.
No, I just wanted to mention it.
Third base.
Some people that watch the show, I think, might be reading it, so I figured I'd mention it for them.
That's what I'm saying!
And the other book this week from Dark Horse worth mentioning is Star Wars, or The Star Wars, number 1 of 8, whatever name they're giving it. I actually was about to skip this as far as like stuff I had planned on reading, and then I was like, saw an article about it. I was like, oh, okay, it kind of looks nice. And the artist, I think, is pretty good artist. So I was like, I'll give this a read.
Yeah, I will be checking this out. because that was one of those ones I was going to get up until something happened to pop up. But I have to check this out.
I read it. It was interesting. It was definitely worth reading the next issue.
Yeah, I read it too. I was, my main thing was I just wanted to see what was really different.
Right.
Because this is based off the original script before all the rewrites. And so it was kind of interesting to see characters that had the same names, but their stories were different. Right, right. And Darth Vader's wearing a similar suit, but he has no helmet. And he's, you know, just more of your basic bad guy. And Anakin is the son of a Star Killer, and he's not related to the Skywalkers. He's going to be like they're become an adopted son, and you know, just like all this weird stuff. But you can still kind of look at it and see the threads of. And it's funny if you read through to the back. In the back, they have some concept artwork of the artist who was putting stuff together for this book, and some of the designs that had originally been developed for the first draft of the script, or at least an early draft of the script, that didn't actually get used in the movies, got used in the prequels. So, for instance, in this series, which is, you know, set during the original trilogy, there are the hover tanks, which you saw in episode one, fighting against the Jar Jar Binks people, whatever. Like, those things were supposed to be part of what you saw in episode four, A New Hope. So it's like they're brought back in, but they slightly kind of redesigned them a bit so they wouldn't be as noticeable as being the same thing as what you saw in episode one. But it's kind of interesting how stuff from this script got changed in order to make the Star Wars movies. And then when they went back to the prequels, they kind of stole some of the stuff from it there to throw in the prequels and use it again. And so here it's coming up, you know, back kind of where it belongs. And it's kind of weird. It's neat, though. It's kind of a neat history, but it definitely is a different universe than what you saw in any of the movies.
Next up is... So that's it for Dark Horse. Now we're on to DC, and there are many, many books. First up is Action Comics 23.1, which was the Cyborg Superman story.
Which I read. Am I the only one who read it?
I have read... I only read one DC book this week. You probably can guess which one it was. The important.
I read
one.
It.
It was DC versus Masters of the Universe. Is that the one you read?
Exactly. this is on my list of stuff to read because I said I want to try to give Supergirl a chance.
Yeah. Right, and that's pretty much why I read this too. Is because Dirt mentioned this, and is it Dirt this week? Dirt mentioned this, and Tim mentioned this as well. There's a tie between the Cyborg Superman and Supergirl, so I wanted to see how they expanded upon that, and it was pretty interesting how they did it.
Well, did you read the last issue of Supergirl?
I did not, so I was not spoiled at all. You know, it definitely was more of a revelation for me this time.
Well, okay, because in the original continuity, Cyborg Superman is this android, or was this astronaut who watches his wife die, and he blames Superman for it.
Right.
He masquerades himself as a Superman in a cyborg suit. Okay. In the New 52, he appears in Supergirl, and I forget exactly how they do it. I think they injure Supergirl, and they get part of like her blood, maybe, or skin cells or something like that, and they use that to rebuild his original body. So they take Cyborg Superman apart and rebuild the body that he was, you know, pulled from. And when he wakes up, he is Zor-El, who's the father of Supergirl. And so...
Spoilers!
Yeah, well, it was 2 weeks ago book, so they can have spoilers. So that was at the end of that issue of Supergirl, and it's like, well, this doesn't make any sense. Like, why the hell would it be her dad... from the bottled city of Kandor being Cyborg Superman? This doesn't make any sense at all. Well, the whole point of this issue was to explain that. So, I mean, it's backstory, and you can argue, you know, some of these, the backstory, like, really didn't matter. But for this character, it's such a big change from who he was pre-New 52, old 52, I guess, that... You know, explaining everything is something that had to be done at some point in the history of the character. And I think the story that they put together here was really good. I really enjoyed seeing how it was done. And how well it ties in with so many things that you've learned from previous issues of Superman and Supergirl. Like, it does weave a bunch of different stuff together that you've seen little nuggets of throughout the runs of those different titles. So I thought this was one of the ones that really succeeded in bringing a bunch of stuff together
and
explaining, you know, who this character is and why he's so different. So
I agree. I was about to say, this is what I meant. You know, pre-show, we were talking about what these Forever Evil issues were really supposed to mean. This one really, you know, hit it out of the park when it comes down to actually meaning something and meaning something going forward.
I agree.
Here. Let's see. Next up, I'm going to jump to Batman 23.1, the Joker story.
There it is. Joker! And this is one that I thought failed.
I enjoyed this one. That's the funny thing.
That's what I heard.
I enjoyed this one. I kind of got a kick out of it because I didn't really need it to, you know, Joker is really one of the characters that they've sort of left untouched. And, you know, other than the whole faceless thing, you know, that's a big change, obviously. But in terms of the general nature of the character, they haven't really changed him all that much. So this sort of expanded a little bit on Joker and where he is and what he's going to be doing in New 52. So that's why I liked it.
I guess I just wanted something that tied in a little more
to Zero Year.
Yeah. Because with Zero Year, they've been doing the whole he's the Red Hood, he's not Joker yet. And I kind of expected something a little more of the transition of the character, how he went from one to the other. And it's not. It's basically, I don't know, you get what, him as a little kid, and then you get him as the Joker as an adult. It doesn't really explain how he becomes the Joker, so I guess they're saving that for a Zero Year, but you would think that this would be the time to tie it in, but
they didn't. You know, that's just going to end up being a swerve, him being the Red Hood. That's my thought, at least.
Yeah, you know what? I hadn't really thought of it that way in terms of what they should have had in this issue. I you're probably right when it comes to where they're going to be revealing that transition in that Zero Year, you know, because that's a year's worth of books. So Snyder and company and Capullo presumably still have a lot of time left to get to that. So, you know, this I enjoyed it just for what it was, which wasn't, you know, which I guess developed some part of the story, you know, in the future. Doesn't really expand on the Joker's past all that much.
Okay.
Well, I guess I'll put it also this way. I read the Cyborg Superman one first, and it kind of answered everything and laid everything out on the table. So then I opened the Joker one, and it was just kind of a slice of history from his past. It didn't explain anything. It didn't bridge anything. It didn't connect anything. And so then I felt let down by it.
I understand.
So part of that could just be, you know, having the expectation when you go into it, as opposed to what it actually is and what it stands for.
Okay. Batman and Robin 23.1, the Two-Face story.
I couldn't read this one. I couldn't do it. I got to the first page and just couldn't read it.
I can't say for certain I'm going to actually read this one because, I don't know, it'd be kind of nice to, I suppose, read something about the Two-Face, but it depends on how late in the weekend it is and if I feel like getting to jump on this books for next week.
So just out of curiosity, is this what it's seeming like to me? Is this going to be like the episode of Batman the Animated Series where they're all sitting around the table talking about I almost got him?
Actually, a lot of these don't even have Batman. Like, they don't really have their star character. Mm. Like, the Cyborg Superman one has nothing to do with, like, Superman doesn't make an appearance. In the Two-Face one, he mentions that Batman is gone. You know,
they're all supposed to be dead.
Right. So whatever happens in Forever Evil that gets rid of the Justice League, you know, this is him kind of dealing with the fact that there is no hero there to stop him. So, but then, you know, you go back to the Joker one and, you know, it's just random story from his past that doesn't necessarily tie in to the overall arc. So, they're all kind of, I think it was just kind of a mandate of, hey, do something with villains. But beyond
unless
that,
unless you're the Batwoman writer.
Yeah, well.
Then do nothing.
Good.
Next up is a book that I'm going to ask, what is this book? What is Batman Black and White number 1 of 6? What is that about?
I'm presuming it's a book, like an anthology book, maybe?
Yeah, this is the second or third series of Batman Black and White. And it's basically
a $5 book, I see.
Well, it's basically a bunch of short stories, and all the artwork is, like it says, in black and white. And the idea was when they did the first one, back in like the mid-90s, everybody talked about how Batman was a noir character and how a lot of what he does is the same as kind of like the old pulp detective novels and whatever. So the first couple ones were just the stark black and white artwork telling these kind of, you know, grittier, down-to-earth type crime stories. But then it kind of evolved over the years into more of just kind of like art pieces. Guys just have interesting black and white artwork that want to tell a story. Some of them kind of look like they're penciled. Some of them look like they're kind of an ink wash. Some are just guys that do a whole lot of detail, and the detail kind of gets lost when you colorize it. So it's more of a showcase now of just kind of storytelling and artwork.
Who does the art inside it?
A whole bunch of people. There's like 5 different stories in there.
Are any of them good, though? The art?
I mean, yeah, yeah.
Because the cover is Jim Lee, right?
No, that's Silvestri.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
But, I mean, they're different. So, like, there's one that looks kind of almost like whimsical painted. There's one that's that looks like pencils. Someone did a lot of shading with pencils and a lot of, you know, gradients, whatever. And some of them that have a lot of the, you know, look kind of like what's on the cover. You know, it's just a showcase of different artists. So you might not necessarily like every story that's in there, but you'll probably like at least one of them in there.
Okay. So... Batman, The Dark Knight, 23.1, The Ventriloquist. Is anyone checking for Ventriloquist?
Did not read this. How about you, Dirk?
No.
Okay. DC Universe versus The Masters of the Universe, number 1 of 6.
Yeah.
Thought this had already came out. Is this issue 1?
No, they announced it like 3 months ago, whatever.
Well, maybe those were just regular He-Man and Master of the Universe books I saw. Okay.
Yeah. It's a tie-in with Justice League Dark, basically. At least that's where it starts, and that's as far as this issue gets, is one of the characters from Masters of the Universe, the Queen, technically. She apparently has been making these journeys to DC regular Earth from time to time in disguise because there's so few people using magic on Earth in the DC universe that their like magical reservoir is so much stronger than it is in Eternia because, you know, you have the Orcos and you have the Sorceress and you have Hordak and all these people that wield magic in that universe. And so somehow Skeletor has found out about the DC universe and so he has made the jump over, and kind of like how the Decepticons were trying to steal the Energon from Earth in Transformers the movie, you get Skeletor's trying to tap into this vein of energy, and John Constantine, you know, figures it out, and he's heard of Skeletor, you know, rumors, and Skeletor has heard of John Constantine because he's, you know, apparently such a evil badass, whatever. So the two, they kind of work as separate threads throughout the book, and they cross kind of right at the end of the first issue. So it does tie in with the ongoing series for Masters of the Universe. It's the same writer, so he does weave them together in a way that works. But as far as weaving it into the regular DC Universe, there's no Trinity War going on, and you can't really tell if this is supposed to be before or after, you know, what happens in that series. So I'm not sure where exactly this fits in the DC Universe. It's definitely New 52, but not sure exactly, because they haven't really revealed a whole lot beyond some of the Justice League Dark characters tapping into the, you know, magical energy, whatever, and all that. So for a first issue, I thought it did a good job of kind of explaining some of the different characters. So if you're not familiar with the series, all you have to really know is there are these magical, you know, powerful people in one world and the magical superhero people in the other world, and they're starting to cross over and they're going to collide. And there you go for the first issue.
My question is, which Earth does Eternia live on in the DC Universe? What number is it?
47 and a half.
See, I bought this book, and this is the shame of it. I bought it because for some stupid reason, I love books like this with the crossovers. But in this one in particular was because of the fact that it says Clash of Champions, which kind of reminds me of Contest of Champions. And those kind of books always seem to get me.
But they don't get to that in this issue. But they don't get to it in this issue.
Sure. And is this supposed to be pretty much explaining why it doesn't really go into, hey, this is the reason why the heroes of DC are not on Earth? Because I thought I saw that somewhere.
No, there's nothing about that in here. And again, like I said, this is just the first issue. So it may very well be when issue two hits that Forever Evil is going on. You know, they may tie it in at that point. But it doesn't really happen. Although the one thing I want to ask you, though, if you bought this, did you buy the DC cover or did you buy the Masters of the Universe cover?
Which one? I guess this is the DC cover.
You have Superman on the cover?
Yeah.
Okay. Because there was a Superman cover one and there's a He-Man cover one. And there's been fanboy fights online about which cover is going to sell more copies, because you could order them separately. So it's like, which, you know, comic book stores, which one do they order more of?
I bought it off Comixology, so it was the Superman. Okay. It's basically the one you're showing now.
So there you go.
Got some quick news that I saw tweeted out a second ago from CBR. JMS, J. Michael Straczynski, and Ben Templeson are splitting up on their Image Comics 10 grand. And I guess Ben Templeson, Temple Smith, I don't know why it's Templeton, Temple Smith, I guess was the artist, and Straczynski had to replace him because he stopped hearing from the artist.
Oh, yeah. I saw that one earlier. I didn't really go into that because I don't know the book anyway. So, but I did.
I read the first issue, and it was actually all right. I just never found time to read the various other issues that have come out since then. Oh, well. I'll read that article later.
Yeah. I'm basically, Ben Temple Smith has been going through a lot of personal issues and just kind of withdrew from the world for a little while. Mm. He didn't really say what was going on, but he just stopped responding to phone calls, stopped responding to emails, and was just trying to sort out whatever problem was going on in his life. And so they had to go to a different artist to you know, work on the series because they couldn't get a hold of the guy. And he finally kind of reemerged and just kind of gave everybody an aw shucks and said, I'm sorry, you know, just going through some stuff and trying to deal with personal stuff, and I'm not dead, and thanks for being worried about me. And that was kind of it.
Okay.
This kind of makes you wonder if they're going to start putting substitute writers and artists on standby for cases like this, because it seems like there's been either people being pushed off books or leaving for whatever odd reason. Then they just happen to have, like, all right, hey, you're gone, you're up, you know.
And well, they probably do that on they do that on the, you know, on the big two books, but you know, this is creator owned stuff, so right. This is JMS's own line, so he's probably, you know, he definitely has the wherewithal to say, hey, I can't work with you anymore, you're gone. And you
they
know, there won't
closely so
exactly there won't be nearly usually, much of a backup plan.
And you don't see more But this is kind of rare instance, I'd say.
Well, yeah.
Okay. Just thought I'd mention that real quick. Detective Comics 23.1, The Poison Ivy issue.
I read this one. This was actually interesting.
Was it?
Yeah, it was. It was. This is more along the lines of filling in the blanks of a new 52 origin. And I thought it did a pretty good job of doing that.
So, does it tie in with Birds of Prey at all?
It mentions it briefly, very briefly. Very briefly. It does mention it, so it's there. There's a mention of it in passing, but really it's more about where Isley comes from and, you know, how she's gotten to this point. And she's dealing with Gotham without a Batman and what she plans on doing with it. So that's what this book is about.
Does it mention her her tryst with Clayface at all?
Oh.
I don't recall.
Okay.
I don't recall.
She basically used him for a while, and then Clayface thought that they had this relationship going, and then she got what she wanted out of him and you know, had him impersonate people so that she could steal stuff, whatever, and then she just kind of beat him up and left him to take the fall for it. So there's some bad blood between them, and I was hoping they would kind of follow up with that somehow, but sounds like not anytime soon.
They may have. I just don't remember.
Next up, Earth 2, number 15.1. The Desaad, how you pronounce it?
Desaad. Didn't you watch the Super Friends commercial, Superpowers cartoon when you were a kid?
Oh, even Justice League Unlimited. They you know, they hit on
he was
Apocalypse.
In that?
Yeah.
Yeah. I need to rewatch that.
Apparently. But did anybody read this?
I'm going to guess that's a no. So, Flash 23.1, the Gorilla Grodd story, or Grodd. Does he use the gorilla in front of it? Apparently not. It just says Grodd, number one.
Yeah, he prefers to be called Grodd because he's not a gorilla.
Bah. We'll call him Gorilla Grodd.
You don't call Flash Man Flash, number 23.1.
What is this schism? This is an underground schism.
Oh, and Dork Geekus says JMS response is different from most other creator splits. He didn't bash Temple Smith at all.
Okay.
And I haven't actually read it yet, so that'll be after the show. But what issue are we on? Oh, the Grodd number one. No one read it, so
I actually read it.
I will read it.
It wasn't bad.
I like the Flash.
I kind of got lost a little bit in this. They didn't do the greatest job of explaining where Grodd had been. I guess I didn't really read the early Flash issues in New 52, so they may have dealt with Grodd then, and they may have put him in a certain place. So I was kind of lost to a certain extent. But overall, the issue read pretty well. So if anyone's interested in Grodd as a character, you should definitely pick it up.
See, the thing is, I've read Flash since the beginning.
Okay.
And Grodd did make an appearance, but I've never really cared for Grodd. Hmm. So when he did show up, I just kind of skimmed through those issues and then just kind of kept moving along.
He had a whole storyline, right?
Yeah, he was there for 3 issues, I think.
That's all? I thought there was like a big arc involved.
That is a big arc, 3 issues.
Nah, I thought it was longer. Oh, so since you have been reading Flash from the beginning, Dirt, would you recommend someone that jumped on like right when the Reverse Flash showed up? Would you recommend someone going back to read from the beginning?
Yeah, they've actually done some really neat stuff with Flash in the New 52. One of the things that they brought up is his ability to tap into the Speed Force doesn't just mean he runs fast. He has the ability to kind of, in effect, slow down the time around him, which is what makes him go faster. So there are times when, like, someone pulls out a gun and shoots at him, and he actually kind of slows down the time and figures out the trajectory of where the bullets are going to go and tries to figure out how to move to get through them, and he can actually, you know, slow everything down and do a lot of thinking about what he's going to do, as opposed to just the guy who runs at super fast speed. And there have been times that he's, you know, had to do stuff where, you know, he doesn't have a weapon, he's got to knock somebody out, whatever, and so he throws something and he, you know, calculates the ricochet and, you know, figures out the angle and the velocity and does all the math in his head. He's got the time to kind of sit there and figure it out, you know, before he actually goes into action, which is something that the character never really had before. So it brought, like, a new twist into, instead of just him being, hey, I run.
Okay. And now the big release for the week is Forever Evil number one. No. Which I did read. Ha ha.
I enjoyed it.
It was fine. Didn't think it was David Finch's best work.
Nightwing looked a little weird.
It's when the less characters on the screen or on the pages, the better the art looked, which I guess I can forgive, you know, trying to fit all these characters in pages. You sort of don't want to waste too much time trying to be intricate with it. Like his Lex Luthor or pages look fine. The pages with the crime syndicate look fine. The Nightwing stuff looked all right, I guess, suppose.
My one complaint, though, with the story is that it did the Age of Ultron thing where the battle's already over.
Because we ended Justice League 22, and it's like the big battle between the Crime Syndicate and Justice League was about to was gonna carry over into Forever Evil. Then we get to Forever Evil number one. It's like, oh, the Justice League are dead. What?
And that was it.
Which I guess the whole point of the story is going to be Lex Luthor and, you know, these other villains who oppose the crime syndicate are going to have to figure out what happened to the Justice League and how to get them back, I would assume, is going to be kind of the point of it. So they don't give it away in the beginning because that's what they have to uncover as the story unfolds. Because you definitely get that idea from watching Lex Luthor at the end when he's watching the Ultraman push the moon in front of the sun because sunlight actually hurts this analog of Superman. But, I mean, at the same time, it's like that was the thing I was looking for. So it goes back to that whole what's your expectation versus what they actually deliver. I was looking for something, and the something I was looking for is not what they gave me. So I was a little disappointed in that regard. But on the whole, I thought the story was actually enjoyable. I thought they did a good job of, you know, kind of cementing who the crime syndicate is and how powerful they are and how different they are from the normal Justice League characters. I liked Ultraman breaking into Lex Luthor's vault and stealing the kryptonite so that he could snort it like cocaine.
Yep.
All of that stuff was kind of interesting. So
more like meth, really. Been watching too much Breaking Bad.
So I enjoyed it. It just wasn't what I expected it to be.
Yeah. And, oh, the big spoilers. We're going to talk about the big reveal where they Civil War Nightwing, which is the term people are using. even if it hadn't been spoiled, you know, the rumor had been going around, and even now I'm kind of like, just like, eh, is it that big of a deal? They didn't kill him, so they just, like, Lex Luthor's reaction was perfect. Who is Richard Grayson?
Yeah, who the hell is Richard Grayson?
Who the hell is Richard Grayson?
Shows you how smart you are, Luthor.
Yeah.
The question is, though, is that going to reverberate through the rest of the Bat family? Like, are they going to figure out, well, okay, he's got ties with Barbara Gordon, and then they realize Barbara Gordon's Batgirl? Like, is it going to start unraveling?
Chain reaction? Yeah.
Yeah.
If it does, then it's great. If it doesn't, then
what's the point?
Yeah. Because, like, all the Bat books right now seem to be doing their own thing. You know, Batman's in Zero Year. I don't know what Dark Knight usually does or Detective Comics. Nightwing's got his stuff in Chicago going on, and that's still going on with Tony Zuko whenever that story picks up. Batgirl's doing stuff with, I guess, her dad's hunting her. I think that's what's going on, at least. So, like, where is this going to be picked up? And is it just going to derail what Kyle Higgins already has had planned for Nightwing? You know, I'm pretty sure he's got, like, stories already planned out to take advantage of this. Because everything's done in advance.
There's the question of DC editorial. Did they tell him in advance, or did he just find out when he read the book?
Or did he... Has he hasn't been the Nightwing full-time writer, right?
I don't think so.
Yeah, because it seems like, you know, this is how I envision it. He fits the story of, you know, Nightwing moving to Chicago and, you know, trying to find his parents' murderer, Tony Zuko. And then it's like, oh yeah, so you were telling this nice, intriguing story, but now you got this to deal with. So write some stories around it.
Unless he knew that was coming and decided to do the Tony Zuko thing
first.
Yeah.
To waste 4 or 5 issues.
Well, or to throw that at him and then have this extra thing thrown on top. Like, he knew that this bad thing was coming, so then he wanted to do the Zuko story to kind of build up to having to deal with everything that comes afterwards. I don't know. We'll just have to wait and see what happens in Nightwing. But
yeah.
Is the internet going to explode because of this Nightwing stuff, as Bleeding Cool has been suggesting?
I think Bleeding Cool, as Bleeding Cool does, kind of overhyped things again.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, they expected all these news sites, like legit news, like New York Post and USA Today, I suppose.
Wait, you did not just call the New York Post a legitimate news site.
More than the Times.
No, oh, God, not the Post. Anything but the Post. Take it from a New Yorker.
The point is they expected all these big-time outlets to jump all over this Nightwing being outed story. And I don't believe I saw any reaction on any site. Besides, that wasn't a comic book site. And I don't think I saw many comic book sites talking about it.
Yeah, I think outside of comic book fans, I don't think if you asked anybody who Nightwing was, they wouldn't even know that there is a character called Nightwing, much less that he's the original Robin. Like, most people, it's like Batman and Robin.
Agreed.
Yeah, if you say, oh, well, they just, you know, he was Robin, they gave his identity, they're going to look at you and go, didn't they just kill Robin? You know?
That made news.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's not like they unmasked Batman.
Or killed another Robin.
Yeah. There's some more out there that's worth killing. Not worth, but that could be killed. Killable. Not only in Wolverine titles.
Yeah.
Thank you. Green Arrow 23.1, Count Vertigo is the villain.
Not here.
I will read it this weekend.
I just read 22. I didn't have time to read 23, but I do plan on reading it.
Okay. I guess that's going to be it for everyone. Green Lantern 23.1, The Relic Origin.
I read this because this kind of fulfilled, you know, like I said, what one of the purposes of this Forever Evil event, which is to fill in some of the gaps. And this is really a newer character for you know, that we've been introduced to. So this is a prime time to establish a backstory and an origin. So this definitely fit the bill and told that story from Relic's perspective. And it's a very Galactus-like origin. You know, like, I don't know if anyone else read it, but it's definitely a Galactus-like origin.
It's another one I plan to get to, but I did notice...
without me spoiling everything, right?
I do want to read it now more because I read in... while reading through some of the other villain books, there's an ad for the upcoming Green Lantern books, the crossover called Lights Out.
Right,
yeah.
And, you know, they've been having a problem with the rings and losing their power. And the power goes out for a minute or two, and then it comes back. And the tagline is, they thought the power would never go out. They were wrong. And so now I want to read this because I don't know if that ties in.
It does. You should read it.
Yeah, and it seems like it would because I noticed he appears in whatever other Green Lantern books, and then they had an appearance of him in regular Green Lantern as some sort of, like, mental flash that Hal Jordan was having even though that character hasn't been in the books, it's like, okay, now I have to pay attention to the character of what's happening in this other title. Like, oh my gosh, they're actually tying this stuff together again.
Right. This is probably one of the more integral books, you know, of these Forever Evil books. It's probably the one that's probably integral to reading the main storyline.
Who wrote this one? Is it the guy who's writing Green Lantern now?
Yeah, Robert Venditti.
I believe so.
Yeah. Well, then that makes sense.
It makes sense. It's new villain. They're doing his origin. So, like I said, it actually matters to the main ongoing. And tuning in, William B. West says, how can Nightwing be outed without the whole family being outed? Exactly.
Well, that's our point.
Part of the rumors and speculation, whatever, that people were having when they were talking about Dick Grayson possibly being outed is that Bruce Wayne's connection to Batman Incorporated is very public. So everybody knows that Bruce Wayne is connected to Batman, just nobody knows that Bruce Wayne is Batman. So Dick Grayson was a former ward of Bruce Wayne. He becomes a sidekick to Batman. That doesn't necessarily bring any connection back to Bruce Wayne except what was already there. People know that he's funding Batman and you know, the tech from his company is, you know, building all his gadgets, whatever. So, I mean, it just kind of reinforces that connection between the two, but not necessarily outs Bruce as being Batman.
Okay. Justice League 23.1 is a dark side story.
Which I have, and I haven't read yet.
I will read it this weekend. That's actually, as they say, as I've been saying, it sounds like one of the more important villain stories to tell.
I won't spoil anything then.
I guess the thing
it definitely tells an origin.
I'll probably complain about with these villains issues is, yeah, I see, you know, the villain on the cover, but it would be nice to know who the creative teams are on all these random books going in before I read them. It's hard to keep up with because a lot of them are fill-in writers and artists. And
well, yeah, and that was part of the problem because a couple people have noticed that there are no credits on the covers, and a couple people kind of, you know, went on Twitter and started freaking out about it, but then they realized that a lot of these covers were drawn and finalized and sent to be processed into the 3D covers before they had finalized exactly who the writer and the artist were on the book, because they had to do so much prep work ahead of time. So they may have had an idea of who was going to write it and draw it, but they didn't necessarily know for sure. Mm-hmm. So they just didn't put anybody on the covers. Instead of, you know, leaving some out here, but having some in another spot, they just decided across the line, they just weren't going to put them on the cover, because they didn't have them down 100% at the time that they had to be, you know, finalized so they could make the 3D artwork. So it's just part of that gimmick process of getting those covers. They just couldn't put the names on the front. But I mean, they sent out postcards to your local comic shop.
Right.
So if you actually go and buy print comics, you're not just buying everything on Comixology, you can go into your local shop and get a little like 5x7 card that lists all the different books and who did them.
Oh, okay. That's pretty cool. You should definitely read this, Tim.
Yeah, it's on my list for next.
You too, Roddy Cat.
Yeah, I'll grab a couple of these.
Yeah, definitely read this one because, you know, like I was saying before, there's a couple of these that probably will prove to be important in the storytelling going forward. This is probably one of them. Without spoiling anything more, no spoilers for me.
Let's see, next up is Justice League of America 7.1, the Deadshot story.
Which apparently actually does tie in a lot more than the other books. It is kind of an origin story. I mean, you do kind of get that part to it, but he's been an ongoing character in Suicide Squad, and apparently Suicide Squad is continuing as part of Forever Evil. because they are villains and they are part of the Forever Evil storyline. So this one, it says he gets a call for a hit. You know, he's a hitman. He gets, you know, paid millions of dollars to go take care of people, kind of like Deathstroke. So he gets called to do this hit, and he kind of, as he's getting ready to do it, he kind of, you know, has flashbacks to him becoming the hitman and his different run-ins with, you know, some different people over the years. So you get that kind of origin stuff. But then it kind of ends with him getting ready to pull off this hit. And the hit is apparently going to be what's in the next issue of Suicide Squad.
Yep.
So it does tie into that ongoing. So this, it feels like this should be the Suicide Squad villains month.
Yes, I agree.
But they made it just League of America because they wanted to have all the big books have the tie-ins.
Because no one would buy a Suicide Squad.
Exactly.
That's true.
People might buy Suicide Squad 24 because of the Justice League of America tie-in.
And Charles Soule is going to be the new ongoing writer for Suicide Squad, which actually might make me pick it up.
He's a guy who's been picking up books left and right at DC, it seems like.
And Marvel, because he's the new Thunderbolts writer, which I'm actually giving a shot to again.
Good for him.
Yeah, I actually liked the last issue of Thunderbolts, the Infinity tie-in, so... Superman 23.1, Bizarro Story.
Oh, wait a minute. Before you go there, you had Justice League Dark with the Creeper.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yes.
Which I can bring up only because I don't think anybody read it, right?
I'm going to read it this weekend. I'm actually... Trinity War has me interested in Justice League Dark. Go figure. So I'm going to attempt to read Justice League Dark going forward. And everyone knows how I dislike magic.
Yeah.
I keep expecting those covers that Dirt puts up to start rotating.
Nah.
You know, I have those somewhere. I think they're on my Google Plus gallery. I've got the animated GIFs for those, but...
Let me just say, I hate websites that actually use them because it slows my computer down when I'm trying to load the page. But that's enough griping.
All right,
What can you tell us about this?
I didn't read it. That's what I can tell you.
Oh, I thought you said you read it.
No.
So
it'll be
read this weekend.
I mean, Creeper is one of those characters I didn't really care about that much. And then looking at the redesign of this character, I'm not sure I'm going to care any more about him. So it's just kind of one of those. It's like the Lobo books. Like, I've never really cared about Lobo. And I saw the redesign for Lobo. And it's just kind of like,
It makes you care even less.
So
which redesign for Lobo?
The streamlined one, right?
There's a couple out there now.
Yeah, well, the one I saw where he's wearing the Smallville Justice League ripoff outfit. All right, so anyway, on to Bizarro.
Yes, Superman 23.1 Bizarro.
I will
read it later.
Try that again.
It's their attempts to
find.
There
we go. All right. Not Grim Fairy Tales.
So when did Bizarro get snow powers?
You get what powers?
It looks like snow.
Right.
You always had those powers?
I don't know exactly. I don't know if they've redone, but it makes sense how they reversed a lot of Superman's powers. No spoiler. Well, I guess that's a spoiler, a minor spoiler. But, you know, this issue is about basically the origin of how Bizarro came to be. Not necessarily Bizarro himself,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, it's an interesting read. Is it absolutely imperative that you read it? Probably not, but it's an interesting read. It's about as, you know, it's probably worth reading. That's the best I can say about it.
The most they can do to get me to read a Superman book.
Right.
Okay, Trillium, number 2 of 8.
Anybody?
I did enjoy the first issue of it, and hopefully I'll get to the second issue this weekend.
you know, I plan on getting to it at some point, but when Sweet Tooth came out, I kind of stayed away from it for a while until it had a bunch of issues under its belt so I could sit down and just kind of read them all in one chunk and kind of get into it, because sometimes Jeff Lemire has this tendency to build things pretty slowly, and it takes a while before you kind of get into the meat of it. So I figure this will be one of those ones where I just wait until there's like maybe four or five issues out before I sit down and give it a chance.
Okay. So there's Trillium. I've never read Sweet Tooth, so not familiar.
Well, you should. It was good.
I'm sure it was.
So there.
Just like everything else I haven't read. Any Dynamite books to mention?
Anybody? Anything?
No, not here.
Okay.
I thought one of the cooler titles was Codename Action.
Actually, I was just going to mention that I didn't read the book, but I love the cover to this one.
Oh, that's awesome.
Oh, who drew that?
It's the guys from All Yeah Comics.
Baltazar.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
Franco.
Is that the same team that's doing Green Team?
Yes. Well, okay. It's the writer. The writer's doing Green Team, not the artist.
But, yeah.
But they did Superman Family Adventures. They did Tiny Titans.
Right.
They're doing Aw Yeah Comics. They did. They're doing Itty Bitty Hellboy for Dark Horse.
Oh, I did read that over the weekend.
That was good.
Yeah. It's. I mean,
it's a kid's book. It's
something quickly to read through.
Yeah.
I appreciated it.
So I don't know anything about the book other than this cover. I like the cover.
That's pretty cool. That's from Dynamite?
Yeah, that's a Dynamite.
Is it labeled all ages?
I do not believe so.
That's strange.
I think they just, because he's becoming hot property, so they just had him. This is the subscription-only cover.
Okay.
So your comic book store is only supposed to order this for people who have it on their pull list, but, okay. You know. Nobody really adheres to that. You can find them all over eBay, but
right.
That was the point of it.
Right, so there's a regular cover that may have that label on it. I got you.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Okay, Tiny Titans also, they did.
Mm-hmm. IDW, I don't see anything really to bring up there. I know they're going to change writers.
Oh, didn't you read Danger Girl, The Chase, number one?
I flipped through it to look at, and then I got to the awkward looking image.
Which page?
It was like page four or something.
Yeah.
It was
page four.
Girl holding a camera.
That wasn't that awkward. I saw that. I've seen photographers standing like that sort of.
Yeah, in a Rob Liefeld book.
No, it wasn't that. Honestly, it wasn't that awkward. I thought the one that was on the other page. I think it was Miss Chase was standing in a just a weird, it wasn't even an action pose, it was definitely more of a pinup girl pose. I thought that was more awkward.
See if I can get this image up here, do like y'all do. Oh, now my computer wants to go, so I got too many browser tabs open. Yeah, let me close some stuff.
Close the tabs.
And they're trying to pick up a fantasy player at the same time.
Are you serious?
Julius Thomas for the Broncos going off.
Oh, yeah, he's got two touchdowns already.
Jeez. And he's already, of course, picked up in one league, I checked. Danger Girl Chase. Okay, so if I... Of course, people will just listen to the audio portion of the show won't be able to see this.
Exactly, gotcha. Right? We're just trying to get to it.
Okay, so how do I share my
screen?
This is
why you should tune into the YouTube.
All right, over on the side, there's the little green screen. With
screen
the
share?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. Click that.
On a side note, I like the Adam Black's comment on Twitter. Tim reading stuff with magic. Next, Tim might actually watch a Harry Potter movie.
They're good, Tim. You should watch them.
I watched the first one. I said I was going to just go through them, but that's beside any point.
Okay, y'all see this image here?
Yes.
Get it bigger.
No,
look at that
something.
Pose.
There you go.
Look at this pose. Look at the arch. Look at the...
That is a Zendoscope-esque pole.
That is Rob Liefeld. That is...
It's not that bad.
That is Photoshop. That's Photoshop at his best right there. Look at that arch.
But see, the thing is, she's leaning forward because of the camera. You can actually see the line of her spine, sort of. If you go back, Tim, do me a favor. Go back to the previous page. Go one page up. Yeah, exactly. Now look at this pose. Look at this pose. I got umbrage with this pose because all she's doing is going to her earpiece. And if you ever watched, whatchamacallit, what was the first James Bond with Daniel Craig?
Casino Royale.
Casino Royale. Was it Casino Royale where he's like yelling at the guy to not go to his ear?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So exactly. So this is, she's supposed to be a secret agent. She's going to her ear to go talk, you know, to talk to somebody. But look at her, look at those hips. Look at where she's pointing the hips on that one. That's crazy, man.
I need to read that. I need to flip through it, just see what else Zenoscope-esque I can find in it. I will admit I did read the. There was a 4-issue limited series for Danger Girl a couple months ago. I read issues 1 through 3, and I still have 4 saved on my iPad that I need to look at.
I read this. This was a fun issue. You know, like, you don't really need to know who the characters are. You just need to know the basics, and that's what's important. It's not all that important to know any of the backstory. So it was a fun issue to read just going forward.
That was a Zenoscope S. Let me back off of that one. That was a Danger Girl and G.I. Joe crossover from a while back that I kind of skimmed through. That didn't seem that bad.
Yeah, that caught my eye too. A couple of months. Was it last year?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. William B. West says, "What's wrong with Abby's titties on that cover?"
Oh God.
Which one's Abby?
Yeah. I see the lead girl.
On Say something
cover?
Dirt.
On this cover, right here?
Yeah.
They're,
why? Because they're like normal size or human size?
They're pointing different. They're far spread apart, I suppose.
I was like, do you see you scroll to the. I love where this show has gone completely off the rails. scroll to the. Whatchamacallit? Scroll to the. Does the preview have the. Oh God! The preview has the live cover, right? Like the live person cover, who's like a model.
Oh really?
Oh, the cosplay cover.
Yes, the cosplay cover. You have that?
I do not have that, that was the subscription cover on that one.
Okay, that's funny.
Even though there are a couple of alternate covers here, I see.
Right. Well, there's a cosplay cover.
Yeah, there's an A and B cover, and then the sub cover.
Okay. Hold on, let me see if I can share my screen again. Desktop, screen share. This one, right?
There we go.
Yeah.
That's it.
Okay.
Anyway.
Now let's get back on the rail.
Yeah.
There was one IDW book that I picked up. I've been reading this one regularly, Haunted Horror, which basically reprints the old 50s horror comics, the books of the Comics Code was kind of put together to get off the stands. Most of these are in the public domain because the companies behind them are long out of business. So they've been collecting them and kind of, trying to clean up the quality on the artwork a bit. And, they don't recolor them, but they rebalance the colors, I guess is the way to call it, where the paper that these would have been on is all yellow and brown. And so they turn it back to white and try to fix the color levels so it looks back to what it would have looked like more when it came out back in the day. And so these are all the gory horror stories, monsters and giant rats eating people's faces off and, all of that kind of – all of the good stuff that kids just don't get in their comics these days. So I've actually enjoyed that quite a bit going back, and that's what I consider history. This is what they should be teaching in school is history, like watching people get their face gnawed off by rats.
History of horror, IDW style. Okay, so Image Comics now. You've mentioned them a few times tonight. Anyone read Black Acre number 10? I don't think we've ever mentioned that on the show.
Nope.
No.
Nope. So, Chew, number 36. My first time reading Chew. I enjoyed it. This is a fun book. I want to go back and find the trades for it now.
Nice.
I had, it might have been, I forget who explained it the premise of this book to me on Twitter. It might have been Empress Geek, Impressive Geek, whatever her Twitter name is. If not, I apologize for forgetting who explained it to me, but they explained it as, I guess, at first I thought it was just one character that bites, whatever she bites, that person bites, they can, they experience the memories of the meat. But apparently, I guess it's a whole family, right? Or am I the only one reading it?
Yeah. Yep, you're the only one reading it.
That's pretty much the gist of what I've heard about it.
I read the first couple issues when it came out, and at the beginning, you just think it's the one guy. So if there's a whole family, that's a new thing since I stopped reading it. But
yeah, because like the girl on the cover, she can, she eats something, she can get the memories of it, and then she has a sister that, if she eats the same thing as someone in her vicinity, she can get their memory, stuff that's happened to them in the past. So like in this book, she goes to a restaurant and she orders something, and then she asks, it's like a steak, she orders a steak, but then asks to have ice cream and all this other like weird stuff thrown on top of it. And at first it was kind of weird to me. I was like, that doesn't make any sense. But then the reason for it is so she doesn't eat the same thing as someone else in the restaurant and then get their memories. Except it still happens, and the person sitting behind her eats the same exact thing, and she finds out the person was like this person that's killed a bunch of people, and she freaks out, and her sister that's on the cover has to help her because the killer is trying to kill her now because she knows the secrets.
Well, because in the original arc, whatever, the character you're introduced to is a detective, and he's trying to solve murders. So he actually will, when people aren't watching or whatever, he'll cannibalize the body, because when he eats the body, he then gets the memories of the victim, and he tries to solve the crime of the murder.
So that sounds interesting.
It was really bizarre, and the way I was talking to somebody about it, trying to explain it to him, it's like if you took some of those books that you used to read when you were in elementary school, like where the everything the kid touches turns to chocolate, or, you know, some of those like really bizarre kind of stuff you read as a kid. It's like take one of those stories, but then make it for adults is really kind of what it comes down to. He has this bizarre power that only works in this really obscure way, and he's using it to solve these horrific murders.
And I guess they could option it for a TV show or a movie or something. I think I read that.
There's 1,000 comics being optioned for TVs and movies now.
This one actually could see there. Like a Showtime or...
Yeah, it's going to be on right after Dexter. It'll be back to back.
Take Dexter's place. Invincible number 105. The series I can never get caught up on because I'm not actively trying to get caught up, even though I want to. I like that cover, though. I might need to make that my Twitter avatar come up here.
Say something.
I like the series. I just haven't read this particular issue yet, but... It is one of those that if you're not familiar with it and you want to sit down on a, you know, Sunday afternoon and read for about 3 or 4 hours, you can probably read about the first 60 to 90 issues in one chunk. I mean, it does read pretty easy.
Yeah, because I did binge when I first started back in my comics escapade of reading books. That was one of the ones I started with. And, yeah, I was knocking out issues left and right.
Well, and a lot of them are big fight scenes. Like he's making this, you know, his own version of Superman, basically. And so a lot of it are these giant, you know, battles. So you will have like one or two issues where there's a lot of dialogue, and then you'll have two or three issues of just people punching the crap out of each other and destroying the planet, you know.
Okay. The Adam Black says that photographer in Danger Girl is standing perfectly for someone without a spine. Yep. Next up is, let's see.
Well, there was also Invincible Universe.
Oh, yeah, that's the book I'm actually am reading since it's low numbered, something I can keep up with. I know last issue ended and it's supposed to continue into this one, so yeah, I was kind of, this issue slipped past me this week. I probably would have read it earlier before the show, but I overlooked it, so You will hear me mention it next week.
And I haven't had a chance to read it yet, so we'll just talk about it on next week's show then.
Oh, you are reading it.
Yep.
Cool. Oh, Reality Check number one. I did read.
You read that?
Yes.
It kind of strikes close to home, right?
It looked goofy enough. I said, I'll give this a shot. So basically it's about this guy, Willard Penn, I think his name is, or William Penn. I think it's Willard.
Willard,
and he's a comic book writer, and he gets his big break, and he's got his character who's on the cover there.
Dark Hour?
Yeah, Dark Hour. And Dark Hour comes to life, and he meets his creator, and you don't know how, and
like, so Dark find out.
Yeah. If he starts typing stuff on his laptop, does the superhero do it, or is he just?
We haven't found that out yet.
Oh, okay. All right.
So like he wakes up in the middle of the night, and like his memory is gone, and he can't remember, and his like hard drive has crashed, and like all his stories are gone, and he's supposed to meet with like the big comic book company people the next morning to because they want to pick up his series, but they want to start, right, you know, putting it out in print. And he's like freaking out, and then
they want to know how the story ends.
Yeah,
and that's one of the catalysts, is like, you know, he's got to get an ending to the story, and that's sort of where he goes blank and we go from there.
And another thing is the Dark Hour is, he's like a ladies' man. He's sort of a ladies' man. I think they way to explain his character. He's got like loose morals with women. So that's gonna be kind of funny to keep up with. But the art's nice. I completely don't remember the artist or writer on this series. But
yeah, it's not anyone. I'll shout them out right now because I've got the info up. It's the writer is Glenn Brunswick, and the artist is Viktor Bogdanovich. And you know, this issue kind of, this comic hit kind of close to home, because there's this poor slob sitting in front of his drawing table, coming up with character sketches, and you know, I could just imagine what that looks like, you know, when I'm sitting at my own drawing table. So it's kind of funny.
Oh, see, I thought it hit close to home because you have loose morals with women. Just
like, oh, that too. That too.
It's kind of funny. I'm kind of reminded of last week's show when Tim had to step away and we thought he was saving the world. Hey.
That's right.
Might have been what he was doing.
Oh, and shout-outs to Adam Black. He has the two traits at the house.
So there you
and
go.
And I will be there this weekend, older brother. You know why. First alma mater football game of the season. So I will be down there, and I will be bringing those books back with me. I don't know if I'm coming tomorrow after work or if I'm getting up Saturday morning, but I will let you know.
So this is what we're doing now? We're calling family members on the show?
Yeah, we're making plans. I got to see my peoples.
That's funny.
I do like that he has the trades, though. Actually, I got a couple – okay, so sidebar.
We're going off the record. Excuse me, court reporter. We're going
haven't got to Marvel yet, but so yeah, I've got his trade, or like the first volume of Why the Last Man. Haven't read it. I've got his Captain America: The Winter Soldier, whatever paperback trade. Haven't read it.
Shame.
Got a couple other stuff I've taken from him. I haven't read. So we'll add this to the list.
So in other words, I'm not letting you borrow any of my books.
Or not.
I'll get to them sooner or later. So much good stuff to read, man. See, I can't read old stuff because I have to read new stuff for this show. That's the problem. I do it for the people.
Yeah. Throwing your heart out there, aren't you?
That's it for Image.
No. Satellite Sam 3.
Oh, that's the Matt Fraction book, right?
Yeah. So I basically bought this and the last two. I'll just go over it real quick. Because, I mean, so basically, the story is, hey, the main, well, not the main character, but character in the story gets killed. This all takes place at a failing TV studio back in 1951. And if the cover is basically an indication there was a lot of that going on to people watching the video. And obviously because of drawn by Howard Chaykin, which some people don't seem to care for his art because of that. But the story seems kind of interesting. It's basically turning into a mystery. At this point, the main character's son, well, basically, the Satellite Sam is an old serialized TV show on, a la Flash Gordon or the like. So the main character gets killed in issue one, spoilers, sorry. And because they were thinking that he wasn't around, so they were looking, because he pretty much has a history of being late to the show for getting strange, as the colloquialism goes. So they were thinking that, so they sent somebody to go look for him. That person found him, he was dead. So now the book just kind of takes up after that, to where the son of the character, who is pretty much an alcoholic, but he also works at the television studio as an engineer, took over the role at the last second, but just to get past that one show. But this is basically going on to kind of fill in stuff that's going on in the world around that, because there are things going on with the company and the people surrounding it. So you have a bunch of stereotypes that would have been right. I would almost liken it to a Madman-ish type situation. Kind of hate to, you know, reduce it like that.
I'm mad that the cover's in color and the inside is
black and white. The rest of the book is in, yeah.
But I think Chaykin's art actually benefits from it being in black and white. I've seen, you know, I remember seeing, you know, Chaykin art in the past where I think the color kind of detracts from his line work.
Yeah. And I mean,
nice.
Yeah.
Good job, Dirt. For the people watching the video podcast right now.
In for a treat.
Yeah, and as I'm sharing here right now, you can see a page of the art. The only issue I had with the art was that there, to me, anyway, a couple of the people, if you even look on this page, look similar.
Mm.
So in the course of the book, you're like, you know, somebody's talking to somebody else.
I see one thing I don't like about Empire. I think that think about it. I did flip through the first issue and I never finished it. And I'm remembering why now. It looks real wordy in every panel.
It's, well, yes.
I keep having to read.
You are reading after all.
Right. No, but I mean, it's
where's the action? Where's the mutants?
Yeah, there will be none of that here. But there are some funny parts about the series. Well, the series so far that I've come to find out is like there are mentions of AT&T, which I'm sitting here like, wait, that's a fairly new company, but it's actually not. And also allusions to, you know, forthcoming technology, because it's basically like, so the studio head of the network's trying to say he's got this technology because he's the engineer, you know, to that's going to change everything, but the but his, you know, they're not doing that great. There's like a born again, like if you see in the second panel, the girl is kind of like a born again Christian, and her past is kind of being explored in this issue currently. The writing in it, you can start to see, because I did in the first issue, you start to see Fraction's humor come out of it. So it is actually, it's getting slightly interesting, because now the main character now, who is the son of the person that got killed, is trying to find out, you know, about what stuff is going on in his past and who could have killed him, basically, you know, while battling his own demons. And pretty much everybody does, well, so far it seems like people does, you know, they do have their particular issues going on, like. So it's an interesting read. I'm not probably selling it that great. I should have gotten my notes together better. But
no, it's been interesting. You're liking it.
It's fine. Well, yeah, if you like it definitely comes across that you're reading it and enjoying it.
Yeah, I was about to say, I'm reading it. I don't know if I'm actually enjoying it yet, but it has kind of piqued my interest.
Cool. So, Marvel Now? Marvel Now.
Marvel Now.
And I won't go in alphabetical order just because it would kind of not make sense to start with All New X-Men number 16 without first doing X-Men Battle of the Atom number 1, since it comes in chronological order. So this starts off X-Men 75th anniversary crossover event, something like that? Whatever anniversary they're celebrating, it's 50?
It's 50. 50. Yeah, 55, yeah.
It's a crossover between the X-Books. Yeah, All New X-Men, Uncanny X-Men, Wolverine and the X-Men, and the female X-Men. But this is the launching issue, the Battle of the Atom number 1. You have the All New X-Men team and the Uncanny X-Men team working together to stop Sentinels. Something happens, and they decide, well, the cast of the teachers at the Jean Grey school decide that the X-Men from the past, the originals, need to go back to their timeline. They don't want to, of course.
Are you trying not to spoil what it is that
makes them? Okay, yeah. All right. Yeah, I figured not to spoil that. You know, it's not that big a deal to me, but try not to spoil everything.
Exactly.
And the X-Men from the future show up to end the issue, which then picks up in All New X-Men. But anyone have anything else they want to say or add to Battle of the Atom?
I liked it.
Yeah,
I liked it. It really piqued my interest. Yeah, you know what's funny? I forgot to put, I don't know if this is news or not, but I remember reading something about Frank Cho putting up on his website or tweeting or something along the lines of, you know, he's kind of disenchanted. He's kind of losing steam when it comes to doing Marvel stuff. Week. Right. He's doing, you know, he's losing steam when it comes to doing Marvel stuff. He'd much rather be doing his own creator stuff, but this is the stuff that pays the bills. So,
because he's under, isn't he under contract?
He's Marvel under contract.
Still, he's trying to decide if he wants to re-up or not, I think is what. Because he was saying he's like in this weird area of, you know, yeah, he's got this nice paycheck coming in that he could keep, you know, the jet rolling in, or does he kind of want to take a chance and do some more or do creative own stuff? And he was, I don't know, sending like the article or blog post, whatever it was him kind of talking
through his thoughts. Yeah, he was kind of venting, exactly, yeah.
Well, he was also kind of explaining the whole, you know, if you work for a major publisher, you draw the pages, you send it in, you get a paycheck. Whereas if you do the creator-owned stuff, you draw it, you send it in, you hype it, it gets printed, it gets ordered, it gets sent out, and then you get a paycheck. So it's like he could do
creator-owned stuff. Delayed gratification, yeah.
Yeah, you don't get paid for it for 6 months. So you have to kind of worry about if you want to do creator-owned stuff, how are you going to feed your family? Do you have enough saved up in the meantime? You know, all that kind of stuff.
And Variant Dash just tweets me. He says, I hate that Battle of the Atom is following the Back to the Future logic of time travel. What would be the Back to the Future logic of time travel?
Oh, yeah, there was that article also.
Where right. the family disappears in the photograph.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I will say that as someone who doesn't regularly read the X titles across the line, this did lay out everything pretty easily.
Yeah.
It did explain everything easily. So even though I didn't necessarily know, and I forget, there's some stuff that happened in this and some that happened in All New X-Men. I kind of forget which was in which book, but there are certain characters, like you can see on this cover here, there's this skull-faced robotic thing Zorn? Up in the corner, yeah, which I vaguely half remember from being in New X-Men back in the day,
right, the Grant Morrison,
yeah,
forgotten and, era, except for this.
But I mean, beyond that, I wasn't a big reader back then or whatever. I just kind of vaguely remembered the character. So there is a point where they kind of stop and be like, "Well, wait a minute, aren't you the one who blah 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 this, that, and the other?" And then for me, as someone that doesn't read it regularly, oh right, that's who that is. Like they wrote into the story, the histories and the, you know, people would have dialogue. Hey, isn't that person who did that one thing? Yep, that's them. It's like, okay. You know, so for me, I could still follow everything. It played itself out there.
Make sure to read my review of Battle of the Atom on theclicknation.com.
And also popculturenetwork.com.
And I did bring that up that they, you know, they made this very new reader friendly. By first couple pages, they explained everything from Schism to now.
There you go.
And now this carried over into all new X-Men number 16. Another, I enjoyed this one more than the Battle of the Atom, but it had more Stuart Immonen on art. Which is
well, they got the intro out. Yeah, they got the intro out of the way, so they can.
Actually yeah, that jump helps into the too. Story. And can I say I'm annoyed with Jean Grey? She's like a little whining, mind invading.
That's funny. Well, I joked about this. I said she's been in this time so long now that she's been exposed to Miley. You know, that's bound to corrupt any young girl, so.
Well, like, here's kind of my problem is that, like, on the one hand, she's trying to read the minds of the X-Men of the future to try to figure out if they're legit, what they're really after, is this, you know, what they're really here for, are they who they say they are? But then at the same time, she talks about, you know, you have to have trust between people, and she's trying to read their minds. She takes control of Wolverine and makes him do stuff that he doesn't want to do. But then at the same time, I don't trust these other people. Well, why should anybody trust you? Like, you're untrustworthy.
I don't want to go back to my time.
Yeah, and that's the other thing.
You keep adding up, which is make people want to send you back home.
Yeah, it's like, well, you're trying to tell us what we have to do. You're trying to control our destiny. It's like, that's where you belong. That's where you're from.
Exactly.
From the past.
You see exactly. Why we're trying to control you? Because you're a wild card.
So reckless. I hope that part of this story is to address some of those problems in the character, and I hope it's not just kind of an inconsistent character issue.
Okay. So that's it for the X books. Let's now jump to Avengers AI number 3.
Must we? Today. Must
hey.
We? I read this. You like this? Go ahead.
I mean, I like the premise, and I like this. I mean, this issue wasn't bad. So,
I'm ashamed. Yeah, what did you like about it?
For me? Oh, you know, that whole Vision as a figure, a potential pariah, I guess, or what have you, it was kind of funny because it was like, okay, it just reminds me of how easily corrupted Vision in the past can and has been, but outside of that, it was just a pretty good read. I'm kind of curious as to where this is going to go, because it's almost like they're basically saying, hey, all these AI are sentient, and I mean, and around, they're a new life form, and we need to do something about it and not kill them. And yeah, I don't know how that's gonna play out. It's just been interesting.
I can appreciate that. But at the same time, going back to what you were saying about how quickly it seemed that it seems to be so easy to just corrupt Vision and kind of dance circles around his logic. And I just find that so annoying.
Demetrios made good points.
Yeah, he did.
I can see that. I can see that.
I have to admit, I originally wasn't into this series, at least the premise of it. And the first issue didn't really do much to persuade me, but I enjoyed issue 2 more, and I actually like this issue.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a lot better than Secret.
I'm contractually obligated to read Avengers books, except for Arena, so I have to...
How are you? Like,
Secret
well,
Avengers...
Well, you can read it for... I was about to say, you can read it for academic review purposes, like with the rest of us do.
Sure.
Like, Secret Avengers, I think I'm going to stop reading that. It's not doing anything for me.
I still read that for review purposes.
I'll replace it with this for now until I get tired of this.
Okay.
And then Avengers, next week, whatever, will take its place. All right. Daredevil Dark Knights number 4 of 8.
This was actually good. I read this. This is the first of these Dark Knight, I guess this is like a miniseries, an 8-issue miniseries it looks like. I read this. It was actually pretty interesting to follow, so... anyone out there who's reading the Daredevil regular series would definitely be entertained reading this.
Eclectic.
It's not Mark Waid writing it, but it's definitely interesting read.
Are they, like, is each issue a standalone story, or is it one ongoing arc?
I'm not 100% sure. This is the first issue I've read of it, so...
Did it feel like a complete story, or did it feel like it was continuing?
It felt like a complete story. What I don't like is that at the on the last page it says next, right? Well, it doesn't say to be continued, so I'm presuming that they're standalone.
Okay.
Okay. I haven't actually read any of those yet. Probably won't.
Yeah, I might go back and just see what the other three looked like.
Infinity number 2 of 6.
Bomb, bomb,
bomb.
Oh, actually, I haven't read this.
No kidding. Oh, we can't spoil too much.
You're not going to bother me if you do.
Can't spoil too much.
But
What's the dinging?
What, this is more of another Inhumans kind of Illuminati heavy issue. Once again, the recap page at the beginning had 50 plus people on it as Doug takes a picture.
this thing popped up, so I clicked the button just to see what would happen.
And, what's the dinging?
So, another one.
I get it from the side. Oh.
But I'm trying to remember exactly what all happened in this issue.
That's my issue, too. I'm like, I don't remember. And that was the first book I read.
Like I said, 50 people on the recap page, once again. I counted them all. I think it was 50 on the dot.
Yeah. The only thing I can't remember... Yeah.
Avengers, Illuminati, Builders, the Shi'ar, Imperial Guard, Thanos, his black whatever court, black whatever thing he calls his group. So, yeah.
Oh, the Black Order.
Black Order. So, we had Black Bolt speak, which I sort of half-heartedly joked that if they're going to be pushing in humans, eventually they're going to have Black Bolt speak, because you can't have like the main character not just sit there and look menacing all the time. And
be signing everything, you know, all the time, right?
Well, or Medusa usually will speak for him. That could very well happen, as she was doing in this issue.
Right, that's generally how it works.
Yeah, and
Black Bolt the polygamist.
Yes,
that's right. That's right. I like this issue. You know what was cool about this issue is that one, the art with Jerome Pena and Dustin Weaver was really sharp all the way through. You know, it definitely kept my attention going all the way through. You know, Hickman is definitely jumping between the what was it, like 3 or 4 storylines that are kind of interwoven in this in the story. So that's what makes it so hard to remember what happened, because there's always a couple little things happening in each storyline, so I get the story moving forward.
Right, and basically this one takes place in between, before and in between New Avengers, basically.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Which I was wondering how they're going to pick up the threads that were done in New Avengers and Avengers, and they kind of did that.
Yeah, with the little chaptering thing, sounds like that's kind of how they're going to handle it.
Right. And you know what was funny about this? I don't know. This is just a very small thing. I don't recall what page this was on, if anyone wants to pull that up. But if anyone recalls, we joked a couple of weeks ago while someone snacks.
Sorry. Sorry about that.
Oh, I think that's what you're about to say.
We were joking about how it was silly that Cap was in space.
Oh. Yes.
Yeah. And he's there's a scene in, I believe it's in this book, where he's in a space suit fighting outside in space, you know, not in a ship. So yeah. It kind of made me laugh that, oh, okay, this is how they're going to make sense for it, for Cap to be in space fighting, as opposed to, you know, being on Earth defending the Earth.
Yeah, that shows up on a couple of panels.
Right.
And that there's a revelation at the end. We'll say that.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yes. Yes.
In love.
Yes, right. That smashes in love. That's right. And that this also, this actually ties into the Thanos limited series.
Which that's where I want to bring that up because I read that over the weekend, the end of that over the weekend, and having read this and then read that, I'm sitting here like, wait, there was what is going on here? Because it didn't. There was. I thought. My thing was. I was like, okay, there was going to be an
actual. I don't want to spoil it just yet. Because yeah. Doug still has to read it.
Well, yeah. I mean,
You're not going to kill my enjoyment of the book by spoiling something. Don't worry about that.
And
right. Like, it kind of makes. It basically does kind of make sense now. The parts of Thanos rising.
Right.
That become apparent near the end. So.
I mean, that's all that, you know, it's that one connection to Thanos rising, I think. And that gets, you know, that ties that in. I don't know exactly. I guess it would have been out of left field had they not done Thanos rising.
Right.
That's why that makes it, you know.
All right. Well, then here is it, does Thanos have a kid? Is that what that is?
Bum, yes. Bum, bum.
Okay. Yes. Right. Bum, bum,
and I didn't even read Thanos rising. I'm just making a shot in the dark. That would be my guess.
Yeah, so basically in Thanos Rising, he had a bunch of kids, and
he had a whole...
Yeah, he got around.
Yeah, exactly. He got around. Like Tupac, he got around.
Yeah. So, and he went around killing them during the course of that book. So apparently one is probably still around.
Adam Black says, Battle of the Atom is actually good. For once, an X-Men crossover that ain't boring. The last one wasn't boring, I don't think. Even though I can't think of the name of it at this moment. It's getting late.
I couldn't tell you what it was either.
Y'all can make me think about it. I'll think about it as we keep going through the show. Iron Man number 15, I have not read yet, but I will.
It won't end fast enough. It won't end fast enough.
I think this was the end of the arc, I think.
It's not.
It's not?
It's not. Oh, it's killing me. But at least Greg Land's not doing the art in this, but he was doing it on another book this week. But, you know, Carlo Pagulayan was doing the art on this, and it was a nice change of pace. You might remember Pagulayan's art from the Planet Hulk issues of Incredible Hulk.
From a few years back.
Right, from a few years back. So, you know, he's definitely got a nice, crisp, clean style. And it definitely served this book well, but it won't. This storyline with the recorder robot, you know, 451 will not end fast enough. It's just dragging on.
End already.
Exactly.
Okay. Superior Foes of Spider-Man number 3. Haven't read, but I want to.
Didn't read it. Anybody else?
Well, have you read the first two? Has everybody
series so far?
Okay, that's what
I read. The first one. I don't know if I read number two yet.
It's decent. It's in that Hawkeye vein, being kind of comedy with these people that aren't heroes and not trying to redeem them in any way possible.
Okay.
Superior Spider-Man number 17. You can read my review of this on theclicknation.com and popculturenetwork.com, along with all new X-Men number 17 I forgot to mention earlier.
I like this book.
Spidey 29.9 is back, baby.
I like how they at least tried to make some sense out of this crossover. Like, it's not a random... it was ripped open in time, and exactly. I just pulled through. Like,
so there's actually, have them meet.
Yeah. Like there's actually a purpose behind it. So I at least appreciated that they tried to think it out in advance. It
ties into the story.
Yeah.
I just wish I remembered everything from Spidey 29.9.
I don't think you need to, but, you know.
I mean, they explained it all. It would have been nice if I had made the connections myself beforehand.
Well, and that's the other thing is I don't know if all of this is 100% true to Spider-Man 2099 because it's been so long since I've read it. You know, he's like, well, this corporation owns all this. Like, I don't know if that was really the corporation in that book. You know what I mean?
I do remember there being a corporation. I didn't remember the name. And the main villain, I didn't remember everything about that person either. I'm assuming it's all true because I haven't seen anyone like ranting or raving online about things being changed or what do you call it when you change stuff in comics?
Retcon.
I didn't hear anybody screaming about retcons.
That's true, because if it was, you'd hear 100 screaming thousand fanboys about it.
Yes, especially on this book of all books. So I assumed it's correct. No one's.
I'm not going to be digging on my 2099, my Spidey 2099, like the few issues that I have to see if there's any real problems with it. So.
Why not?
How about you, Dirt?
Why not? Why wouldn't you?
Let's see. And Venom number 40, I haven't read yet, but the series is coming to an end. Mm-hmm. I'll read it this weekend.
I read it. It's okay.
Next up, we have X-Factor 262, which is the end of the series.
Of a 10-year run.
Yeah.
I'm amazed that it went 262 issues.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised myself. Like,
I still remember, in my mind, X-Factor is the book that had the original X-Men in it.
Exactly.
Yep, same here.
And then I remember it as the weird book that Peter David did all the crazy stuff with.
Mm-hmm.
But, hey, I give him credit for finally giving Shatterstar's origin.
Did somebody really care about that? Oh, okay. Well, okay.
That's Tim Dog raising his hand for those on audio.
So how long until there's a new X-Factor number one that's like Wolverine, Deadpool,
King Pride. January.
There'll be the X-Men from the future. For the Battle of the Atom. What? They stay in the past. It'll be their story.
They did say the status quo will be changed at the end of Battle of the Atom.
I was about to say, yeah, that is just as plausible as anything else at this point. So you may have hit upon it.
Ooh, be fun if that does happen. You heard it here first.
Scoots.
That's right. Listeners.
I have issue 261, 261, previous issue, and then this one. I'm going to read them back to back to end it.
I think I am going to attempt to hit this up on Marvel U, just the series in general anyway, because I know I had not read pretty much any of it. So.
Okay. Did Battle of Atom. We don't care about X-Men Legacy, so that's it, right?
Well, you don't care about Takeo?
I kind of do, just because I like, was it Oming? How do you say his name?
Michael Aaron Oming?
Yeah. How do you say it? Oming. Oming. I like his art, which I went back and tried to read one of his, what's it, that Dark Horse series that came out this week, I think? Or it comes out next week, Victories.
The Victories? That was this week, I think, yeah.
Yeah, that was this week. I read last month's issue of that, and I was just like, I don't care. You know, I was coming in mid-story and didn't know what was going on. I wanted to read a book illustrated by Omen. So maybe I just need to go back and try to collect the Power series. What do you people recommend?
I can't recommend it, but I was thinking about doing Powers myself.
Yeah, I would probably say Powers as well.
Something drawn by him and Bendis on writing. Why not? So Bendis and him both are doing that Takeo series also. Right. Takeo is kind of early on, though, so I guess I have time to catch up on it. We shall see. So that's it for Marvel. Valiant had two books this week. Quantum and Woody number 3, which I did read. It wasn't as funny as the previous issues, but it was still, you know, can't go
wrong.
I
enjoyed it. Quantum and Woody. I don't know if I remember. Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know if I remember reading number 2, but I enjoyed this issue. This is pretty funny.
I remember number 2 being, you know, I actually laughed out loud at a couple stuff. And Shadow Man I have not read. I'm slowly reading more Valiant since they send me stuff. You know, Fun Woody, I'm reading. And I got to read issues 3 and 4 of Harbinger Wars. And I read Archer and Armstrong 11, I think. Yeah, so I'm going to try to keep up with that issue going on. And I'm reading Ezio Manowar currently. So.
Wow, okay. Yeah.
But I know Shadow Man, Justin Jordan's leaving as a writer, and someone else is coming on. I forget who off the top of my head. But probably got it in my email. Oh, where? The show's about over. So now we do our clicks of the week. Where
Wait. We got to discuss one other thing before we wrap it up.
I like that cover, by the way.
We have to talk about this cover. when we talk about subliminal advertising.
I didn't get it.
Well,
oh no, you didn't. Don't say that, Tim. I mean,
besides the female on the cover looking like she's taking a dump.
Trust me, you.
Oh, Tim.
I mean, that's what I am. Like doing a set
Tim, pose. You get Tim, it. Let me ask you a question. Are you the type of guy who is going to go straight through the bush, or are you the type of the guy that goes down the dirty brown hole? Which one are you looking for?
Oh, that's me.
Which type of guy are you?
Oh, mercy.
I mean, it's like half subliminal. It's like like you don't catch it at first, but then as soon as you see it, you're like, oh, well, I don't think there's any other way you could take that.
Who is that from? Is that a Zenoscope book?
That was my illusion from earlier.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
Which, by the way, there was an article that said the Zenoscope president is not worried about comic snobs. So I just kind of skimmed it. So he's like, yeah, we're doing our thing.
Don't, he's making books that appeals to himself.
Basically, yeah. Which, you know,
wait, who's the artist on this? Is that Greg Horn?
Yeah, he painted this cover.
Oh, yeah, I love Greg Horn.
He's not doing the inside, but he did one of the covers.
Of course.
Yeah, no, I was going through the list of because there's a bunch of variants on this, or a bunch of different covers. I wanted to see who that was.
Yeah, this is cover C.
Gotcha.
And by the way, the name of the book is Grim Fairy Tales Presents Wonderland Down the Rabbit Hole.
Yeah, which so, apparently is doing very well for them, that the Grim stuff.
Well, that's their bread and butter.
Right.
Grim Fairy Tales.
Hmm.
So, come for the art, you stay for whatever.
Are they
the
paying art? Their artists?
The art.
What was that, Tim?
I said, are they paying their artists? I remember hearing rumors a while ago about people not getting paid or whatever.
Really?
I mean, it's probably a couple of years ago.
Is this licensed, the Grim Fairy Tales?
It's public domain, Grim Fairy Tales.
Oh, okay.
Oh, it's like the Once Upon a Time type stuff?
Right. Okay.
I'm going to come up with my own, what do you call that kind of stuff?
Public domain.
Yeah. I need to come up with my own public domain type stories.
So anyway, that's there's a crowd for those books.
That's funny.
Yeah. So clicks of the week, where we all select one book that we enjoyed from this past week. I actually need to start thinking of these beforehand. The show.
So last week was easy for me. Last week was Thor number 12. So that was an easy pick for me. So you guys go ahead.
I know what I'll pick. Oh, book I've read. Oh, you know what? We ain't talking about Mighty Avengers.
Oh,
where was that?
Completely spaced on that.
Well, yeah, that's not until next week, isn't it? But
no, it was out this week.
It came out this week.
Are you sure?
How did I miss that?
Wasn't it?
No, uh-uh.
I read it.
Well, let's put it this way. It was on. Well, yeah, that's you have other means, and I saw
that. No, but I thought it was like 1 to 9, 4 issues. Hold up.
No.
You know, I think it's one of those that they push back. Like it was originally supposed to come out, and then they pushed it back a week.
Ah,
okay.
Good thing.
So we had it. I think it was in the review bundle for 9.4, but it's actually pushed back to 9.11.
Okay. So I can still write my review for it.
There you go.
So don't talk about it yet.
Yeah, we'll talk about it.
Cool. Okay, so forget that. So click of the week. I'm gonna go with Superior Spider-Man number 17.
Okay.
Spider-Man.
Okay.
Who else wants to go next?
Anybody else?
What, are you waiting for last? You want to be last?
No, I'm trying to make a decision between.
He's still trying to decide.
Yeah.
Well, because I can, I am going to go with the Cyborg Superman in Action Comics just because it just kind of blew me away how well it tied in with everything, how it wrapped up a bunch of loose ends, how it grabbed stuff from Superman and Supergirl, and it made all this stuff make sense. And it, you know, this is one of the promises of the New 52 was doing something different with these characters, and this character actually makes sense now. It's not this, you know, goofy astronaut guy. It's something that actually works in the mythos a little bit better and is planned out a little bit better. So I enjoyed reading that a lot, and it tied in with you have to be reading Supergirl, you have to be reading Superman for it to really work for you. But if you've been reading those, then it really, I think this does pay off very well.
Okay, I'll go next. It's a tie. And Dirt will disagree with me on this, but I actually got a kick out of reading Batman 23.1, the Joker book, but not for maybe there was just a bunch of, you know, kind of cool images and just cool bits in the book that I enjoyed reading. So that's, you know, that definitely is what puts it up on my my click of the week, my co-click of the week. Together with, I would say, Infinity Number 2, because I just enjoyed the art. It was just very dynamic. And as much as I didn't...
not that one.
Right, I was about to say, as much as I didn't quite... Yeah, I was about to say, that's not new. That's not out yet.
It's this one.
As much as I didn't appreciate that Hickman was jumping around so much, I definitely got the feel that the story was moving forward, so... I definitely put this as my co-click of the week along with the Joker one-shot.
Well, that's what I was going to say about that earlier. I knew it was something. I was like, I kind of like it because of the fact that it's moving like a movie in sorts. I'm like, yeah, he's jumping around a lot, but and because of the nature of comic books, it doesn't really lend itself, I guess. But I kind of like it because it's doing that, because you kind of just see, hey, what things are going on around different times.
Right.
Be like, so. But I guess, because I've thought about that as a pick, but I guess I will go ahead and say Satellite Simon number 3, because it actually is the one that kind of got me interested in reading this book a little bit more.
Nice. See, there you go. That's why you should read it.
Yeah, and I guess this would also double as the non-comic book, I mean, the non-superhero.
Or non-superhero book of the week.
Pick of the week, yeah.
Yeah, and I'll add 236 to my non-superhero. Actually, I probably could even make that my pick of the week, because I enjoyed it that much.
Nice.
I'm a Chew fan.
All right.
Oh, yeah, we'll chew you.
All righty.
So, Tim, you got anything in Marvel U that you didn't pick up from last week?
I still haven't read. Okay. I still haven't signed up for Marvel U.
Oh, gotcha.
So that'll probably never happen because I still, like I said, have too much stuff to try to read.
I was signed up for it, you know, like back when it first launched, way back, but I hated how you couldn't, you know, take it on your tablet, you couldn't read it offline, and they had a new promotion now where they were pushing their Android app. You can actually check out 12 issues at a time and download them to read offline now, and then they had a deal where if you signed up, you got a free action figure.
Yeah, that's the plus stuff.
So I was like, yeah, okay. So I signed up for the free toy.
I will say my coworker at work, I mentioned it to him like a month or so ago, and I see him reading it every day at lunch now, or using the app. So it's being utilized.
Yeah, well, I was using it before they did the offline stuff, but it was like now. But now that they, well, when they actually put that in, it was like, all right, now I can do this.
Well, and it's funny because I signed up for it, downloaded the app, I grabbed like 2 comics, and then I haven't even read them.
But, yeah, that
but I've happens. Got my Happy Meal toy coming, so, you know, I'm happy.
All right. I think that'll about do it for this episode of the Comic Book Chronicles. I want to thank everyone for tuning in tonight. Once again, make sure to follow everyone on their individual Twitter accounts. Agent 70 is at agent_70. Dirt is at PCN_dirt. Roddy Cat is at Roddy Cat.
And News Nerds Need.
And I'm
put that out there.
Yeah, his news web news Twitter account where he tweets out links. So check that out. And I'm at.
He wants you to draw Harley Quinn naked.
And read about Zendoscope fairy tales and the owner not being ashamed or whatever. And I'm at TimDOGG98 and at the Click Nation accounts. So once again, thank you all for tuning in. This is the Comic Book Chronicles, and we are signing off. Yes, Dark Horse! What? Comic Book Chronicles has dopest trace chronic, yo. I'm steady tripping over them pages, some dog and Adam Black. No. Yeah. Graphic or not, this is motherfucking comic book art. The man, Stan Lee, Jack.